Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen and I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rebecca, who many of you know traveled with me to Zambia on our most recent trip. Thanks for being with us again, Rebecca.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me.
So this afternoon, Rebecca agreed to be on with us because we are going to talk about the next promotion for the participation game that we're doing right now towards raising funds for Cantalomba as well as participation and fun. And so for the next few weeks, we are going to concentrate on raising money for roof loans. And so, Rebecca, you want to walk us through kind of the details of that?
Yeah. And I think it's just a great idea. So the way it will work is over the next 3 weeks, we will have a target goal in mind to raise enough money for 7 new roofs for the co-op members of the Living Compassion Project. And that amount, that dollar amount, is $3,710.
I just love how exact that is. It's such a nice, neat number.
Yeah. I mean, just think, if everybody just aimed for that $10, amount, we could get there. So $3,710, and that would give us enough money for the remaining 7 people to get new roofs for the remaining 7 that still need them for their homes. And so the way it's going to work then is people are encouraged to send in checks or go on the website and in the little memo thing to just put roof loan, and we'll tally up all the amounts. And if you give $25 or more, then we can get into a drawing to win a free pass for the next email class, the next Time to Feel Good email class that's going to be coming up soon.
Yeah, which both of us can testify to. Is definitely worth an entry.
Oh, yeah. See, now, that the email class is named It's Time to Feel Good, and making a donation would make you feel good. So you can even get a jump on that.
Exactly. Like a pre-extra credit.
Exactly.
That's great. And actually, for people who, might be saying to themselves, oh, well, yeah, I've done the Time to Feel Good email class. Actually, you haven't, because first of all, of course, it's new every time. But also, I hear rumor that, when we did the second class, Sherry created a whole sort of second tier, second track for folks who had done it the first time. And I hear rumor that there might even be another track. So it's really getting quite exciting. So anyway, that in itself is, to me, worth an entry in this particular participation promotion.
Yeah. So 25 is the magic number to get you in that drawing, $25. And the big magic number is $3,710.
Yeah. And I loved your point. So it's 3,710, which means every dollar counts, because that last 10 is going to be the thing that pulls us across the finish line. So that's really fun.
And the thing that'll make such a huge difference to those 7 folks who still need their roof.
Yeah. And to me, it's worth, it actually isn't all of the, you were saying the remaining members, there are a few more who technically still would be in line for a roof loan, really only because they live in houses that either belong to their families and they're okay houses, so they're okay for right now, or they live in the houses that are actually on the Living Compassion property, so they're not houses that they own.
Mm-hmm.
These 7 folks are people who they need a house before the rains start, and the rains begin in October, mid to late October, just like California, actually. And they truly, truly need this before October begins, and I think it's fun. I'm just going to read the names of the folks just because for all you blog fans, you may recognize them. So Susan, who is one of the women who helped in the sewing this last trip, Lucy, who's one of the cooks, Prisca, who is the woman who's always in the tuck shop. So if you've seen photos of the tuck shop, you've seen Prisca. Maureen, who is also one of the cooks. Margaret, who is one of the older women in the cooperative. Benedetta, who's also one of the cooks. And then the last one, which I think is quite fun, is Moyinda, who is our reporter. So everyone knows Moyinda. He actually doesn't live in Cantalomba, but he lives in a fairly poor area also and wants to move to Cantalomba. And in order to do it, he would need this roof loan, in order to build a house and put a proper roof on it and move into Cantalomba, which I just think, I project it's fun for the whole cooperative that someone is choosing to move into Cantalomba. It just kind of is a big signal of how, Cantalomba isn't the, awful place that it used to be that people didn't want to live in.
Yeah, that is really cool. And to think that he's wanting to raise his child and, right, you know, bring his family to that community says volumes, I think.
I agree. It really, really does. Yep. Yeah. So I know, Rebecca, when you were there recently, you saw examples of both things. You saw people who are in the cooperative who have brand new roofs because of past roof loans, and you also saw old roofs. And I wonder, you know, what you can say about that.
Yeah, you know, it was funny when we were driving out there and I first saw that, and I had even heard the stories and everything, but my first reaction was, why do those people throw the trash on their roof? You know, and because I saw tires and bricks and just old, you know, everything up there. And it was just really kind of startling to realize, oh, that's holding their roof in place. And then to hear the story about when the rains come, it's not unheard of to be crushed in your sleep, for example, if you're, you know, if it happens to be at night, from your roof collapsing. And I mean, that, you know, that was just horrifying to me to think about. And you know, people, they don't really have any other option because that, you know, they don't have the money to buy a proper roof. And it's such a preventable accident, you know, with a good roof, it saves their whole home.
Exactly. I was thinking about that today. You know, I was thinking that probably for most Americans, a leaky roof is, I mean, that's a bummer for sure because it's really expensive to put a new roof on your house. But it's not quite, I mean, it was a year into the roof loan program even before I got the magnitude of it. And just from exactly what you're saying, where Teresa would tell us stories of, you know, the houses in Cantalumba are made from unfired mud brick. So essentially they're just taking the mud from, you know, the site where they're going to build the house, and they're making these bricks. So it's a very, very affordable way to make a house, very cheap. You know, it's just make the mud into bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they build it up, and they have this beautiful way of doing it, and it's quite strong. But, of course, since they're not fired, they're not, you know, they haven't been gone through that process, immediately when they get wet, they just turn back into mud. And so the most expensive part of building a house is the roof itself, is the tin sheets, which are quite expensive. And so with these leaky roofs, from what you described, you know, that are made out of old tires and shoes and what looks like trash, they leak like crazy. And so over time, the walls eventually will fall down. I mean, it's just pretty much guaranteed. And talk about the cycle of poverty. So over and over and over again, they're having to rebuild a house, rebuild a house, rebuild a house, because they never have enough capital at one time to buy all of the tin sheets that we'll need. I mean, we've run into so many people who are, you know, three-quarters of the way through building their new house. They even have some good tin sheets, but meanwhile, the rains are coming. And you can just watch the turmoil that creates of, oh, my God, are we going to beat the weather? Am I going to be able to find the funds I need to put this together before I lose the whole thing?
Yeah, the desperation. And just to clarify, so the roof is actually like plastic or cardboard or things, and the tires and things are to hold it down, right?
Yeah, well, actually, so ideally the roof is made out of tin. And if you
The old roofs,
the
people
roof,
flat.
So What tends to happen is that they're sort of made from tin, and I say sort of in the sense of there'll be really, really, really old pieces of tin roofing, or there'll be sheet metal that's recycled from something else. I mean, you saw nothing in Africa gets thrown away. It all gets used for something else.
Right.
But yes, exactly. I mean, so an average roof in Cantalumba will be made from everything. I mean, everything from garbage bags to, you know, yeah, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Teresa would tell us that if it rains in the middle of the night, the family will get up and stand along the walls, you know, to in the fear that the roof will collapse. And that's the way they spend their whole night then, you know, for the safety, is standing up with their back against the wall, you know, hoping that it doesn't cave in. And, it, you know, so to you know, for me anyway, what came to mind when I heard that story is how safe I feel in my house. I love it when it rains, and I feel all cozy and, you know, and safe and during a thunderstorm and everything. And it just, it's like, man, I would want that for these people, you know. And it's just heartbreaking to think of that desperation that they would feel.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That reconnected for me when I heard that story, I remember, and I just got goosebumps as you told it again, I remember saying to myself, okay, I'll do whatever it takes until all of these folks have that safe place to be. And the
yeah.
gratitude that they have when they receive a roof loan is so moving, so inspiring. And so I really hope folks will take this opportunity to participate. You know, often we always have the roof loan program available on the website, but this is a chance to, you know, if you can't give the whole, each loan is $530, so if you can't give a whole $530, which not a lot of people can at one time, you know, maybe you can, but not a whole lot of people can, this is a chance to participate with Sangha over the next 3 weeks. You know, put in what you can, and together we'll get these seven folks a safe house for this coming rainy season.
Yeah, we can all enjoy our own rainy nights and days a lot better knowing that the folks over in Cantalumba are enjoying theirs too.
That's such a good point. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, and wait, there was one other thing.
Yeah. Were you going to say the same thing about the update coming from Alex?
That's it.
Yep, great. So at some point during the show, we're going to hear from Alex at the participation desk, who is going to give us an update on our participation statistics. So stay tuned for that. Thanks, Rebecca.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Have a good show.
We'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I really enjoyed that conversation. As a matter of fact, I went back to spending 2 years with a leaky roof. And,
wow.
And it was miserable. And never once did I think my house was going to fall in on me.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, oh, the wood is getting ruined. Or, you know, oh, I have to put more pots up, you know. And but the idea that, you know, it's going to fall in and kill my children or, you know, that I just never had to worry about anything like that. And so I'm really glad that's the emphasis for this next period of time to get roofs for those folks. Because, yeah, everybody ought to have a safe place to live and enough to eat at the bare minimum. So glad
yeah.
we're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
Good.
I went to a fabulous workshop this past weekend.
I did too. It was very fun, wasn't it?
It was great.
Yeah, we looked at success and power and fun and good stuff.
It was very good. Thank you for offering it.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. And plus we brought in some money for Cantalumba too, so efforts being made in lots of places, lots of directions to assist these folks in being able to have the things for themselves and their families that are so important for us to have for our families.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. And that I often take for granted.
Yes. Yeah. That. Yeah. Exactly. So many things. I was thinking about Mayunda, who's, you know, he's just a favorite with all of us. And, of course, the way we got to know him is that he has been our taxi driver for years. And then something happens with the company and, you know, he can't drive any longer. And, you know, I start having these fantasies about, you know, how can I get a car for Mayunda so that, you know, he can go on driving when we're not there, even when we're not there, and then especially when we are there. And it's just those kind of, you know, I want to go somewhere, I just go out and get in my car and go. And to think of as you say, all of these things that we take for granted, that they're just so much a part of our lives, and they're just absolutely beyond the reach of so much of the world population.
Yes, yes, yes.
Good to think about and remember and feel grateful for what we have, and then take the next step, as Jen and Rebecca are reminding us to, you know, do what we can to to make a difference where we can.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Sherry, I have some announcements here.
Right.
You will be leading a weekend workshop at Esalen entitled, What Do These Questions Have in Common? And that's the weekend of August 12th through 14th.
Hmm.
And then August 17th through 24th, Wednesday to Wednesday, you'll be leading a special retreat entitled, What You Practice is What You Have, which is for participants in any of the It's Time to Feel Good email classes.
Yes. A stellar retreat, if I do say so myself.
Oh, and I can say so, too. And that'll be at the Monastery Murphy's. And then August 27th through September 3rd, the extraordinary There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, also at the Monastery.
Yes.
And again, another There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and that'll be from Wednesday to Wednesday, September 7th through September 14th.
Indeed. I think the first one is full, but there are some places left in that second one that you mentioned, the Wednesday to Wednesday.
Great. And it's time to make plans to join you, Sherry, and the monks at the 10th Annual Bridge Walk on Saturday, October 1st.
The big party.
Yes. Yes. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Okay, let's get started.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, this is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hello. Oh, I'm shocked I got on. So
you're
I
kind
have
of
not...
speechless? We'll give you a second to collect yourself there.
I haven't prepared my story.
Oh, my goodness. Well, here, let me help you. What's going on?
Oh, well, I've been trying to call in for a while, and so weeks before when I was trying to call in, I had originally called even years ago about a whole conversation I was having with, you know, Voices of Conditioning about, you know, I've been married 30-plus years and whether I was going to stay with my husband and back and forth and back and forth. And then over time, I just sort of sat with that, and it kind of had fallen away. So it's just sort of looking at, well, what happens to these what appear to be huge, insurmountable conversations in my head that they could just fall. Where do they go, and where do they, and then they get, do they come back from the hole in which they went? And
that's
so
funny. I think we can all, without going too far, come up with several of those that are just they're just earth shattering, and then they disappear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can feel it's there if I want to defeat it something, but it's like a volcano that, you know, it's gone in, it's quiet. It's just not. And, and so I was just, yeah, it's dormant. I know if I started to feed it, you know, like that thing about feed the wolf or whatever, it would rise up again. So then I just started looking at, because I heard you talking to someone on the radio show about the systems that run our life. And the sense of that same sense, because that conversation, like, wow, what system is running my life that it could wreak such havoc for years and then go quiet and be there at all?
Yeah, yeah. While it focuses on something else.
It what?
While it focuses on something else. You know, that I was talking with people about that. I think just very last weekend, as a matter of fact, where it sort of cycles with folks. You know, it gets obsessed about the relationship. Either you have one or you don't have one. It's good, you know, it's bad. You've got to get out of it, or you've got to find one or whatever. And then it kind of moves away from that, and it's on the job or the, you know, what you're doing with your life. What are you serving the purpose? Is there one? Is there not? Is that, you know, that sort of thing. And then it, for a lot of people, it'll go on to your health and, you know, are you going to be all right financially, and what's going to happen with this, and what's going to happen, you know, and it'll spend extended periods of time obsessing about a particular one of those topics, and then it'll, you know, cycle back around again, and pretty soon there you are on your relationship.
Yeah, and I realized now as you were talking, I think I'm kind of getting anxious because there isn't a current conversation like that going on. So it's sort of like, okay, well, what's going to come up?
Okay, so we can get anxious about the absence of a conversation.
Yeah.
There's and no that could be the conversation.
Yeah, but it's sort of, I think a little bit of it is from the meditation of being able to kind of just sit with just pure anxiety instead of, okay, what's wrong? Something needs to be done.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
The conversation is not emerging or building the way it used to, but it's still this. I think about it a lot, what you said about something's wrong, not enough. You know, that there's that.
Yeah, and so if this is what you're saying, with your meditation practice, with practicing awareness, you can just stay with the sensations, even though they're labeled anxiety, but you can stay with the sensations instead of letting them go off and build into a story about something.
Yes, yeah, and I don't currently have any major discussion going on in my head about some critical issue.
Yeah.
And that's a new place.
Yeah.
But there is low level sort of anxiety. It's still there, you know.
Yes.
It doesn't have a conversation attached to it. It's just sort of this, I don't know what it is. It's strange.
Yeah.
Why are you quiet?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, that's very good because that's where we're going with awareness practice. You've realized that those sensations don't mean there's something wrong. If you're, you know, in the past, if you weren't paying attention, the connection would be made. And, of course, millions and millions of people deeply believe that if those sensations are happening, it's because there's something wrong, and I've got to scan around until I figure out what it is. And then when it hits on the story that matches that, there's that, oh, that's what it is. But it isn't. And so when we catch on that those are false connections that are being made. That those sensations are there simply because those sensations are there. Now you get to that place that you just got to, which is, what is that? What is going on? Why those sensations there?
Yeah, that is the place. It's there, and I think, well, okay, so I'll just go to sleep and see if they're there when I wake up. You know, because I don't know what they mean, and I don't really know where they're from. They seem to be there a lot, and they seem to go away.
Yeah, but and maybe they don't mean anything.
Anything. Yeah, no. I know.
Yeah, it's like... you know, the restless leg syndrome. I don't know. I'm sure there is a reason to have it, but you know what that is? Have you ever experienced? Yeah. And it's like, I could make up a reason for it, but does that really change what's going on? You know, wouldn't I really be ahead of the game just to say, well, this is what's going on? I'm not benefited by having a story about it, especially a story about what's wrong or what I haven't done or how I should have whatever in order to or what I need to do in the future to make sure that it doesn't. It's what's going on now, and I'd be all right with that.
Yeah, and the stories for me, because I think my personality is that then there's something I can do. And generally, my stories are more about what's wrong with somebody else. That's why I'm feeling the way I feel.
Yeah.
You know, I can fix them or help this. So it's kind of a little bit of letting go of that control thing, too.
Yeah. That's funny. We just started an email class on Zen and the Enneagram and today, as a matter of fact. And so I am deeply immersed in... you know, those kinds of sentences and what they tell us about somebody's Enneatype.
Well, interesting, right before I called, I signed up for that class. I just printed the first assignment. So, you know, the Enneagram. I'm a six.
You're a six. All right. Yeah.
Which I think has a lot to do with anxiety and fear and worst-case scenarios. And so I was just getting ready to analyze things through that.
filters.
Yeah, that's really fun because I was just saying right before the show started, I was talking to June, who, with whom I'm doing the class, and we were talking about that, trying to communicate in writing that notion that we look out at life, we see a circumstance, and deeply believe, of course, that it's real, and that we're seeing it as it is. And then to have that growing awareness that the reason it looks like that is that I'm looking through the lens of, in this case, the way we're talking about it, the enneatype that I am. And that there could be 9 folks, you know, one of each of the enneatypes looking at that situation, and they would have 9 different stories about that situation. And when we look at it in that way, it's easy to see why nations, families, neighborhoods can't get along, because there you are looking at the same situation. The person next to you is having a completely different experience, and you're just looking at them like, how can you not see this? It's
well, because it feels like the truth from inside. And it's so strong.
Yeah. And then I just love that moment of stepping back and going, wow, it's actually not true. It's my experience. And so in that sense, it's true for the part of me who is experiencing it that way. But it's not true, empirically speaking. So all of this stuff to me is anything that helps us get a little bit of distance on our karmic conditioning is fun and helpful.
Yeah, and that even said, Nina, the thing about it is its own system. And I thought, oh, there's that word again. And I don't quite have a grasp, but I'm beginning to have a sense of how strong and how pervasive it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like I'm up against something pretty big here, so.
Yes. And every time we can step back and get that a little bit of distance on it, then we're starting to see it instead of me. Because, of course, what karmic conditioning wants is for us to be looking at ourselves all the time. You know, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? That I can't, whatever it is. And when we get that little bit of distance and twist it just a tiny bit and go, wait a minute, what if that lens, you know, I somewhere recently, and I was looking through a kaleidoscope, and it's that kind of feeling. You know, you just turn that thing a little bit and it's a completely different picture.
Yeah. And also there's this other thing of just, who do I trust? Talk to say, this is my experience, and have them even push back a little bit and go, you know, there's another way to see it, to really believe that that's possible.
Yeah.
So there's so much trust in it, which is partly why I call you, because I trust you. And I can hear what you say, that indeed is not the only reality. So thank you.
Yeah. Sangha is a good thing, isn't it? It's a good and helpful thing.
Yeah, when I don't call in for a long time, I start feeling like this ship calmed at sea somewhere way far ashore.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you sailed in.
Thank you so much. You'll be here in email class.
Take care.
I'll be fixed with all the paranoid thoughts. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And now, Sherry, we're going to get the latest from the participation desk.
Whoa.
Yes. Welcome, participation desk.
Thank you, Michael. We are now live from the participation headquarters, and we bring you the latest news flash. Here is the headline news on where we are with the big participation game. As it stands, the numbers we have that have come in today are, there are 7,920 participation points.
Woo!
which means that we have only 2,080 points left from reaching our goal of 10,000. There are 27 people on board to do a fundraiser, and there are 70 people registered for the bridge walk. We are going to extend the deadline for the lucky winner of the Chitenge product of their choice for the promotion that we're running this week to midnight tonight. So it normally would have ended just before the radio show. We are extending that. And behind the numbers, there are countless inspiring emails sent in about ways people are participating. And we have chosen two short ones at random to share with you. This one is a fundraiser plan that someone sent in, which we thought was very inspirational. This person says, a friend and I will sponsor a hike in our area to which we'll invite friends and family. Our goal is to raise $500, which is enough to sponsor two children at the highest contribution rate for a year. And then the fundraiser will be on Saturday, September 24th. This one is from someone reporting in on a kindness that they sent in for points for the participation game. This person writes, I unexpectedly have the day off today, and rather than going with the condition story that I'm, in quotes, useless today, I made a schedule of participation, including writing this email. I am far from useless. I earned points today. Gusho. I thought that was great.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that's it from the participation headquarters and the desk at the participation headquarters. And we'll come back again next week for the latest update.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
And have a great show.
And welcome back to Open Air. Gary, Alex mentioned that the current promotion has been extended. And I think that's the one to register for the bridge walk. Is that correct?
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So hopefully everybody, as soon as we say goodnight, we'll hit that button and sign up. You know, it's amazing. We're 2,000 what? Points away from the
2,080
goal?
Points away, yeah.
And we're 2 months away from the bridge walk.
Perfect.
That's astounding, isn't it?
Yes.
Love
it's great. It's
great. We are good.
It is good. I've been meaning to add up my own personal participation points. I haven't done it yet. I think it would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just talking to somebody who happens to be a 1 on the Enneagram.
Uh-huh.
Who has done an Excel spreadsheet with all of the weeks and the possible points and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And is charting it every week. I was so impressed.
Yeah.
That is very much not me. But I was so happy, and I thought, you know, if we ever do anything like this again, I'm going to get somebody to make me one of those. And then I can print it out, you know, and make little X's in it.
Yeah.
Because it just sounded like so much fun, but.
Put little star stickers on there.
Huh?
Put little star stickers on
there. Yes, exactly. Maybe if we ever do anything like this again, of course, we could get Awareness Junkie Man. You know, he's very good at those kinds of things, to make us little charts and then send them to us, and we could put our stars on them. That would be very good.
Yes.
It might not be too late. He might be listening in and be inspired. I don't know.
Anything is possible. Including more callers.
Good.
Next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hello. Yes, hi. My name is Omar.
Hello.
I'm actually calling from Switzerland, but I'm Italian. I read your depression book. And I'm still reading it, which is amazing.
Thank you.
I visited the sites, your site, and the Living Compassion site, and I was amazed by how great it is, how the world can be full of great human beings like yourself, like all of the monks and the men and women associated with Living Compassion and everything. I'm calling because I feel really, really, really terrible. I'm seriously depressed. I've been diagnosed with a major depression disorder and generalized anxiety disorder and panic and everything. Everything started about a year ago when I had a huge panic attack. Then it all went downhill. I started having all these voices in my head, this bad conditioning, and basically my life started to be a living hell, and I don't know what to do because I try to have to talk to psychiatrists, but it didn't work, and I took some meds, but they really didn't work. I still have this huge anxiety, these huge panic attacks. I hardly get out from the house. It's been a year. I just get out to go to psychiatrists and everything, but now I'm kind of fed up with it.
So Omar, may I ask you something?
Yes, please.
So was your life kind of okay up until a year ago? Did something happen?
Yes. Something really didn't really happen. It was just a huge panic attack that I took so seriously, and I
scared you.
I just basically it escalated into so many bad things. I was just having a great year because the 2 years ago I had cancer, but I beat it. After that I was fine, and then I had depression, but I always got out of depression with medication.
And
now
were you depressed before all of this happened? Do you have a history of depression?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you had a history of depression, and which you took medication for.
You had
cancer. And then, and you got through that, and then kind of out of the blue, as we say, you had this massive panic attack.
Yes, yes.
And then did the panic attack, I said, and it scared you, is that kind of what happened? You got panicked about having such a severe panic attack?
Yeah. First of all, I thought it was like a heart attack and everything. Then when I was sure it wasn't, I just began having this kind of conditional behavior of anxiety where I wouldn't do anything, and I lost all my interests, all my hobbies. I wouldn't go out with friends anymore, and I'm 23 years old. I'm very young, so I don't know what to do.
Can I ask you something else?
Yes, please.
So the medications that you took for depression seemed to help you.
Yeah, they did before, but not in this case.
Okay, and then you had the panic attack, but the anti-anxiety medications didn't help you?
No. They just help for hours, but then everything starts again. It's it's like leaving for hell, and I feel terrible, and
yeah.
I don't know what to do, and
so
it's bad.
At this point, is the anxiety the thing that is the hardest for you? Or does it feel like you're depressed and anxious?
It feels like I'm depressed and anxious. Before, I was anxious for the first, like, 2 months, 3 months. Then, because anxiety and panic basically ruled my life, and they still are ruling my life, I got depressed and more depressed because I couldn't do things that I used to do, like taking a plane and like going out, like doing
stuff.
Everything, you know. Hobbies, and I feel like I don't know. I feel so depersonalized and derealized. It's like I'm not myself anymore.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So now you just kind of stay in most of the time.
Yes.
Okay. Now, before, were you active? Did you play sports or that sort of thing?
Yes, I was. I played every kind of sport recreationally. I was playing basketball. I was playing soccer. I was in martial arts.
And you
kickboxing.
Are you able to work currently?
I study.
Go to school.
I go to school. What happened is that that's why also I got very depressed. Is that I usually study in London, England, in a university there, but everything happened there, the panic attack and everything. So I couldn't go to college on ground anymore. So decided to go back home and do the university online, which is not that good. I'm having good grades, but I'm so, you know, lonely and.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: Could you make yourself go play soccer?
I tried, but it makes me feel even worse. I don't know. I tried, but it doesn't work.
Okay, now how much did you try? What does that mean, you tried? Did you try for a week?
No, I tried for like a day or 2 days.
Yeah. Okay, so you read the depression book. So you know that
yes.
I am a huge, huge believer in the power of exercise to affect the kinds of conditions that you have.
Yes.
That the worst, absolutely the worst thing we can do is to be sedentary.
Yes.
So, of course, the depression wants you to stay inside and not do anything, and then there's nothing for the system to do except just feed on itself.
So yeah.
My strongest encouragement is for you to, and I mean, I phrase it this way because it's what I had to do. I would have to literally make myself, the equivalent of drag myself out and start physically moving. And after I moved for a little while, you know, to start walking, walk for a mile. Okay. After I walked for a mile, then things start, you know, start lifting up a little bit, you know, and I can go the next, by the time I get to 3 or 4 miles, you know, I actually feel good because the energy is flowing. It's not stagnant anymore. I'm getting different sensations in my body. And the different sensations are giving me different messages. So,
yes.
Yeah, so I would actually be physically active until I was worn out, until there wasn't any more energy in me to produce those manic or panicked kinds of feelings. And there wasn't actually energy enough to be depressed anymore. I would just be tired.
Yeah, the bad things, the worst things that happen to me are obsessions.
Yes.
And they are so awful because I can't control them. I know that they're dumb. They're not what I am. They're not my my product, you know, but
right.
Still.
Yeah. So another question: have you read what you practice is what you have? Do you know about recording and listening practice?
No, I haven't.
Okay, another question: did you read the depression book in Italian or in English?
In Italian.
In Italian. Okay. So I don't know if what you practice is in Italian yet. I could certainly find out. But
no, but it's fine. I can read in English.
Okay.
My college was in English. My high school was in English. I was taught English by an American, so it's fine. It's not a problem.
Okay.
For me.
Good. Well, recording and listening practice, I think, would really help you with the obsessive thoughts. Because what you will learn to do in that practice is to focus your attention on what you want to focus your attention on, not having your attention taken over and hijacked by conditioned mind. So
yes.
The combination, I mean, this is the best I can, you know, can offer you. It's what I would do if I were depressed. I would start moving, and I would start recording and listening to the information that I want to listen to, rather than being victimized by those obsessive voices in the head.
I see. If it's so unfortunate, because if I were in the States, I would have, you know, I would love to have a retreat,
right.
sign up for a retreat and everything, and it would really help me tremendously. But
yes, the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is the one that you want to put on your calendar of things I'm going to do for myself as soon as I can.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? And in the meantime, if you would pick up a copy of There's Nothing Wrong With You. And,
yeah, I'll order it for the internet, I think.
And get a copy of What You Practice Is What You Have. If you can't get it where you are, email us. We'll send it to you.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and stay in touch, would you?
Yes, yes. It'd be great to call every now and then.
Get some get some support.
Yes, yes. Is it okay if I call like every week or every?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Actually is. I mean, we'll have shorter calls, but just to check in and let us know how you're doing. And, you know, as you start through the recording and listening practice, I might be able to give you some tips on how to work with depression through that practice.
Sure.
Yeah.
All
what
right.
else do you have to do in the middle of the night, after all? You would just be sleeping if you weren't talking to us.
Yes, it's because, you know, I have insomnia and everything, so
yeah.
I...
Yeah, this is a good thing to do when you can't sleep. And, you know, in terms of listening to things, you probably realize that, you know, we have hundreds of hours of these radio shows that
mm-hmm.
you can download and listen to people talk about, you know, all kinds of things going on with them.
Yes.
And get some tips for how to practice. And, you know, the main encouragement that I would give you is develop a lot of patience, because it's true that it's a long, hard slog, and you can
mm-hmm.
do it. You can do it. You can turn it around.
Thank you. I just need your encouragement on that, because I really want to live again. I want to go back to college. I want to have
want to feel like you again.
Yeah, I want to feel like myself again.
Yeah.
I want to get back to my spirit and my.
Yeah.
My soul, you know, it's like everything was stripped when I had that panic attack. It's so, and, you know, when the depression came and everything, it's terrible.
And then cancer on top of it. This is too much.
Yes, you know, when you get scared for your health, and you think, oh, I might have something really bad, but it's not, you know. At least thank God I'm healthy, and but I really want to thank you. It might be inappropriate to say, but I truly love you as a person. You are an angel, I think, for all the people that are having problems. And my only relief in these days is reading your your books and your book. Fortunately, I just have that, and going to the website and try to. I would like to participate in email classes. I would like to do everything and to donate because I really like living compassion and everything. It's
good. Thank
it's
you.
Just...
And let me ask you this. Are you in the email class that's just starting?
No, unfortunately not.
Okay. Well, write in and ask to be added to the class. Okay? We're just starting, and I think it could be a great support for you. So there's one more thing to add to your support system.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
You'd
be
so
my guest.
I write an email.
Yes, send an email in, and into the whatever the email address is, information@livingcompassion or whatever it is, and they'll see that you get into the class.
All right, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
And we'll talk.
Thank
to you. Huh? All right.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Omar. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Such courage, Sherry.
Whew. Human spirit, huh?
Yes.
Truly inspiring.
Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net. Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, what if you
swam in a river of joy? Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Nancy in Texas.
Hey, Nancy in Texas.
If Omar's still listening, I want to say to him that I was exactly in that place at one time with your books, and it does get so much better. It just will get better than he can believe possible. That whole summer I was doing river trips with friends, and on a river trip everybody takes a book, and then they share them. And every time they'd say, "What have you got?" and I'd hold up the fear book. And no one ever asked to borrow my books. But what I wanted to describe was an experience that I had this weekend. I had just finished listening to some Eckhart Tolle tapes about the pain body, which in my mind I at least equate with karmic conditioning. And I was getting really grumpy Thursday and Friday and just irritable and, mad at the traffic and just And then Saturday morning, all of a sudden, I just had this moment of absolute awareness that there was something inside of me just boiling for a fight, and that it wasn't me. And I spent all weekend just holding that in awareness, just being very aware of this furious energy, trying to lash out at everything around me, but it couldn't get through the awareness. It was like it was contained within the awareness. Is that, I mean... And I, when it continued on Sunday, Saturday, I thought, well, I don't know what's going to happen with this. And Sunday I woke up and it was still there. It was still raging around inside, or, you know, what felt like inside. And I just stayed really alert and really, I can't put it any other way, just really, really aware.
And not letting it act out, just aware that it was there.
But I could see every opportunity, you know, the drivers that cut in front of me. I could see everything that it used to get to express itself through me. And then Monday I woke up and it was just gone.
Huh.
So I don't know. It was just a really interesting, and I am quite aware that I have been a very angry person in the past and felt very justified in my anger. And I'm thinking, I wonder if it was really my anger, because it was real clear to me that this was not mine.
Yes.
It was just there. It was my, it was like it was some energy that I got to maybe transform. I don't know if I transformed it. I don't really know what happened, and I just wondered if you had any feedback around that.
Well, it's really interesting to me, because to me what you're describing, of course, is karmic conditioning, and it's that were we just talking about it somewhere, the sensations, yes, the sensations, and that they don't mean that, you know, with whatever the sensations are, whether it's fear, anxiety, or in this case anger, and that having that that habit of responding to those sensations in that way, that connection gets made, and then that's a way that karmic conditioning can reinforce itself, because you're not meant to realize it's not you.
Yes, this is the first time I ever really got it. It felt like a tiger raging around inside of me, but I was very clear that it was not me.
And that
I was just the awareness observing it.
Yeah, and the way you describe it, I bet a lot of folks would recognize that feeling of it's in there spoiling for a fight. You know, it's kind of looking for something to get upset about.
Oh, and that was really neat to watch, too, because I could see all the targets, and I used my experience unconsciously was to go ahead and be enraged by that driver or by that event or by, you know, whatever, to let that energy express itself through me.
Yeah, and without having any idea that the energy came before the incident. Right.
That was the other thing I got to see, too, that it just was just looking for something to feed on.
Yeah. And what we're meant to believe is, well, I was perfectly happy until that driver cut me off, and then whoosh, this rage comes up, and because of what that person did, rather than what you've had a chance to see is, no, it's just in there punching, and finally, yes, there's something I can go after, and you saw it, so you weren't buying into it.
So what is your... does that begin to diminish it? Is that a way of diminishing it?
Don't you think?
Well, I hope.
Yeah.
That would be my hope.
Yeah, because, just with this language, you're not feeding it. You're not feeding that tiger. And before, that it was getting fed every time one of these kinds of things happened.
Yes, it was feeding well.
Yeah. Yeah. Feeding
so
really on
that,
your energy, on your life force.
So does that give that energy back to me?
Isn't that what it felt like?
Well, all weekend I needed to stay very alert. And I kept wondering, and then Monday and Tuesday it just felt like, well, that's gone.
Yeah.
Or that.
So there's that hypervigilance that's necessary to stay centered, because you know if you go unconscious for a second, it's going to come out and take somebody's head off. So you're staying hypervigilant, and therefore the energy is staying with you.
It wasn't a draining sort of energy to stay very aware of it.
Right. No.
I guess I was more alert. I just felt very, very alert and focused and aware that was going on.
Yes.
And so maybe that was me getting my own energy back instead of feeding it into that.
Yes. So the way it feels in that unconscious acting it out, when the tiger, to use that, stay with that image, when the tiger takes you over, then you're really feeling the energy through the tiger.
Right, because that used to feel very empowering in its own way to be enraged.
Yes, and then when after the incident, the feeling is often one of feeling drained.
And picking up the wreckage.
Yeah, and so that's how you can watch when the tiger is there and you're identified with the tiger. Yes, very powerful, just swiping things with that giant paw, and then. It sucks the energy out, and you're left with the carnage and cleaning up the mess. So with this, it never took you over. So you didn't have that feeling of it feeding and being powerful, but you also didn't feel the energy being drained out of you. So it never took you over. You never lost energy. In fact, having to stay so hypervigilant, you were, it sounds like, remaining in awareness in a powerful way for quite an extended period of time.
Yes, it was really a neat experience.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, a good retreat.
Well, I guess so. Okay, well, it was great, and to everyone that's just discovering the healing here, it really, really works.
It does, doesn't it? And we're very lucky that way. Thank
you.
So Nancy.
Thank you again, and on to the next one.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And Sherry, it's just about 6:00.
Wow. It flies, doesn't it?
It does fly.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it and every minute of it. And I'll talk to you next week, if not before.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night. Bye.